Chapter 14, which is full of kobolds again. Charmaine was still thinking of Calcifer when she got up next morning. As she came out of the bathroom, she saw that Peter was busily engaged in changing the sheets on Great Uncle William's bed and stuffing the old sheets into a laundry bag. Charmaine sighed. More work. Still, she said to Waif, as she put down the usual bowl of dog food, it keeps him busy and happy while I look for Calcifer. Now, are you coming up to those rocks with me? Waif, as always, was only too pleased to go wherever Charmaine went. After breakfast, she trotted eagerly after Charmaine through the living room to the front door. But they never went to the rocks. As Charmaine put out her hand to the doorknob, Waif charged out from behind her and burst the door open. And there was Rolo on the doorstep in the act of reaching his small blue hand out for his daily crock of milk. Uttering tiny snarls, Waif sprang upon him, got her jaws round Rolo's neck and pinned him to the ground. Peter! Charmaine roared, standing in a pool of spilled milk. Come quickly! We need a bag! She put one foot on Rolo to keep him in place. Bag! Bag! She screamed. Rolo kicked madly and bounced about under her shoe, while Waif let go of him in order to bark. Rolo added to the din by yelling, Help! Murder! Assault! In a strong, grating howl. Peter, to do him justice, arrived at a run. He took one look at the scene in the doorway and snatched up one of Mrs. Baker's embroidered food bags, which he managed to get over Rolo's flailing legs before Charmaine could draw breath to explain. Next second, Peter had the bag entirely over Rolo and was holding it up, bulging, twisting and dripping milk, while he tried to reach one of his own pockets. Nice work, he said. Get some string out of that pocket, will you? We don't want him getting away. And when Charmaine had fumbled out a length of purple string from the pocket, he added, Have you had breakfast? Good. Tie the top of the bag really tight. Then take it and hold it fast while I get ready. Then we can go straight there. Uttered the bag as Peter passed it over. Shut up, Charmaine said to it, and hung on to the bag with both hands just above the purple string. The bag twisted this way and that, while Charmaine watched Peter drag loops of coloured string from pockets all over his coat. He put red string round his left thumb and green round his right, then purple, yellow and pink round the first three fingers of his right hand, followed by black, white and blue around the first three fingers of his left hand. Waif stood on the doorstep, frayed ears cocked, staring up at the process with interest. Are we going to find the end of the rainbow or something? Charmaine asked. No, but this is how I've memorized the way to the kobolds, Peter explained. Right, shut the front door and let's go. Shouted the bag. And the same to you, Peter said, leading the way to the inner door. Waif trotted after, and Charmaine followed with the writhing bag. They turned right through the door. Charmaine was too preoccupied to say she thought that was the way to the conference room. She was remembering how easily all the kobolds had vanished and reappeared, and how Rolo himself had sunk into the earth of the mountain meadow. It seemed to her that it was only a matter of time before Rolo sank out of the bottom of the embroidered bag. She kept one hand underneath it, but she was sure that was not enough. With milk dripping between her fingers, she tried to keep Rolo in with a spell. The trouble was, she had no idea how you did this. The only thing she could think of was to use the way she had dealt with Peter's leaking pipe spells. Stay inside. Stay inside, she thought at Rolo, massaging the bottom of the bag. Each massaging produced another muffled yell from the bag, which made her surer than ever that Rolo was getting away. So she simply followed Peter as he turned this way or that and never noticed how you got to the kobolds at all. She only noticed when they were there. They were standing outside a large, well-lighted cave, full of little blue people rushing about. It was hard to see what most of them were doing because the view was partly blocked by a very strange object in the entrance. This object looked a little like one of the horse-drawn sleds that people used in High Norland when the winter snows came down and made it impossible to use a cart or a carriage, except that this thing had no way to hitch a horse to it. It had a huge curvy handle at the back instead. It had curls and curvy bits all over it. Dozens of kobolds were working at it, climbing this way and that over it as they worked. Some were lining the inside with padding and sheepskin. Some were hammering and carving. And the rest were painting the outside with curly blue flowers on a gold background. It was going to be very magnificent when it was finished, whatever it was. Peter said to Charmaine, "Can I trust you to be polite this time? Can you remember to be tactful at least?"
"I can try," Charmaine said.
"It depends."
"Then let me do the talking," Peter told her.
He tapped the nearest busy kobold on the back.
"Excuse me, can you tell me where I can find Timmins, please?"
"Halfway down the cave,"
the kobold piped, pointing with her paintbrush.
"Working on the cuckoo clock. What do you want him for?"
"We've something very important to tell him," Peter said.
This attracted the attention of most of the kobolds working on the object. Some of them turned and looked apprehensively at Waif. Waif at once looked sprightly, demure, and lovable. The rest stared at Charmaine and the writhing embroidered bag.
"Who have you got there?"
one of them asked Charmaine.
"Rollo,"
said Charmaine. Most of them nodded without seeming at all surprised. When Peter asked, "Is it all right to go and speak to Timmins?" they all nodded again and told him,
"Go ahead."
Charmaine got the feeling that nobody liked Rollo very much. Rollo seemed to know this, because he stopped writhing and made no kind of noise while Peter edged his way past the strange object and Charmaine came after him, holding the bag sideways so as not to get paint on it.
"What are you making?"
she asked the nearest kobolds as she went.
"Commission from the elves,"
one of them answered. Another added,
"Going to cost a lot,"
and a third said,
"Elves always pay well."
Charmaine came out into the cave feeling none the wiser. The place was huge, and there were tiny kobold children tearing about among the busy adults. Most of the children screamed and ran away when they saw Waif. Their parents mostly moved prudently round to the back of whatever they were working on and went on painting, polishing or carving. Peter led the way past rocking horses, doll houses, baby chairs, grandfather clocks, wooden settles and wind-up wooden dolls until they came to the cuckoo clock. It was unmistakable. It was enormous. Its giant wooden casing stretched all the way up to the magically lighted roof. Its huge clock face was propped up separately, filling most of the wall beside the casing, and the cuckoo for it, which a score of kobolds were diligently covering with feathers, was rather larger than Charmaine and Peter together. Charmaine wondered whoever might want a cuckoo clock that big. Timmins was climbing about in the massive clockwork with a tiny spanner.
"There he is," Peter said, recognizing him by his nose.
Peter went up to the giant works and cleared his throat.
"Excuse me. Excuse us."
Timmins swung himself round a mighty coil of metal and glowered at them.
"Oh, it's you," he eyed the bag. "Kidnapping people now, are you?"
Rollo must have heard Timmins's voice and felt he was among friends. The bag bellowed.
"That's Rollo,"
Timmins said accusingly.
"That's right," Peter said. "We've brought him here to confess to you. The lubbock on the mountain paid him to make trouble between you and Wizard Norland."
The bag shouted, but Timmins had gone silvery blue with horror.
"The lubbock?" he said.
"That's right," said Peter. "We saw him yesterday, asking the lubbock for his reward, and the lubbock gave him the crock of gold from the end of the rainbow."
"Of gold,"
denied the bag loudly.
"It's lovely."
"Both of us saw it," Peter said.
"Let him out," Timmins said. "Let him speak."
Peter nodded at Charmaine. She took her hand away from the bottom of the bag and stopped doing what she hoped was her spell. Rollo instantly fell through onto the floor, where he sat spitting out milky ends of embroidery wool and old crumbs and glaring at Peter. I really did some magic. I kept him in there, Charmaine thought.
You see what they're like? Rollo said angrily. Bag a person up and fill his mouth with stale fuzz so that he can't answer back while they tell lies about him.
Well, you can answer now, Timmins said. Did you get a crock of gold from the Lubbock for setting us at odds with the wizard?
How could I have done? Rollo asked virtuously. No kobold would be seen dead talking to a Lubbock. You all know that.
Quite a crowd of kobolds had gathered around by now, at a safe distance from Waif, and Rollo waved dramatic arms at them.
Bear witness, he said. I'm victim of a pack of lies. Go and search his grotto, some of you, Timmins ordered.
Several kobolds set off at once. Rollo jumped to his feet.
I'll go with you, he cried out. I'll prove there's nothing there.
Rollo had gone three steps when Waif seized him by the back of his blue jacket and bumped him to the floor again. She stayed there, teeth in Rollo's jacket, frayed tail wagging with one ear cocked toward Charmaine as if to say, didn't I do well?
You did wonderfully well, Charmaine told her. Good dog.
Rollo shouted, call it off. It's hurting my back.
No, you can stay there until they come back from searching your grotto, Charmaine said. Rollo folded his arms and sat looking righteous and sulky. Charmaine turned to Timmins.
Is it all right to ask you who wants such a big clock?
While we wait, she explained, seeing Peter shaking his head at her.
Timmins looked up at the vast pieces of clock. Crown Prince Ludovic, he said, with a gloomy sort of pride. He wanted a whopper for Castel Choir.
Gloom swallowed up his pride.
He hasn't paid us a penny yet. He never does pay, when you think how rich he is.
He was interrupted by the kobolds coming back at a run.
Here it is, they shouted. Is this it? It was under his bed.
The kobold in front was carrying the crock in both arms. It looked like an ordinary clay pottery crock, the kind someone might use to make a stew in an oven, except that it had a sort of glow around it, in faint rainbow colours.
That's the one, Peter said. Then what do you think he did with the gold?
The kobold asked.
What do you mean? What did I do with the gold? Rollo demanded. That there pot was stuffed full.
He stopped, realising he was giving himself away.
It isn't now. Take a look if you don't believe me,
the other kobold retorted. He dumped the crock down between Rollo's outstretched legs.
This is just how we found it.
Rollo bent to look inside the pot. He uttered a cry of grief. He plunged his hand into it and brought out a handful of dry yellow leaves. Then he brought out another handful and another until he had both hands inside the empty crock and was sitting surrounded in dead leaves.
It's gone, he howled. It's turned into dead leaves. That Lubbock cheated me.
So you admit the Lubbock paid you to make trouble, Timmins said.
Rollo scowled up sideways at Timmins.
I don't admit to anything, except that I've been robbed.
Peter coughed.
I'm afraid the Lubbock cheated him worse than that. It laid its eggs in him as soon as his back was turned.
There were gasps from all round. Big-nosed kobold faces stared at Rollo, pale blue with horror, noses and all, and then turned to Peter.
It's true. We both saw it, Peter said.
Charmaine nodded when they turned to her.
True, she said.
It's a lie, Rollo howled. You're pulling my leg.
No, we are not, Charmaine said. The Lubbock stuck out its egg-laying prong and got you in the back, just before you went down into the earth. Didn't you say just now that your back hurt you? Rollo's eyes popped at Charmaine. He believed her. His mouth opened. Waif scrambled hastily away as he began to scream. He threw the pot aside. He drummed his heels in a storm of dry leaves and yelled until his face was navy blue.
I'm a goner, he blubbered. I'm walking dead. This thing's breeding inside of me. Help! Oh, please! Help me! Somebody!
Nobody helped him. All the kobolds backed away, still staring in horror. Peter looked disgusted. One lady kobold said, "What a disgraceful display!" And this seemed so unfair to Charmaine that she could not help feeling truly sorry for Rollo. "The elves can help him," she said to Timmins.
"What did you say?"
Timmins snapped his fingers. There was sudden silence. Although Rollo continued to drum his heels and to open and shut his mouth, nobody could hear the noise.
"What did you say?"
Timmins said to Charmaine.
"The elves," Charmaine said. "They know how to get lubbock eggs out of a person."
"Yes, they do," Peter agreed. "Wizard Norland had had lubbock eggs laid in him. That was why they took him away to cure him. An elf came yesterday with the eggs they'd taken out of him."
"Elves charge high,"
remarked a kobold by Charmaine's right knee, sounding very impressed.
"I think the king paid," Charmaine said.
"Hush!"
Timmins's brow was wrinkling right down into his nose. He sighed.
"I suppose," he said, "we can give the elves their sled chair for nothing in exchange for them curing Rollo. Curses! That's two commissions we won't get paid for now. Put Rollo to bed, some of you, and I'll talk to the elves. And I warn all of you again not to go near that meadow."
"Oh, that's all right now," Peter said cheerfully. "The lubbock's dead. The fire demon killed it."
"What?"
shrieked all the other kobolds.
"Dead?" they clamoured. "Really? You mean the fire demon that's visiting the king? Did he actually kill it?"
"Yes, really," Peter shouted through the noise. "He killed the lubbock, and then he destroyed the eggs the elf brought."
"And we think he destroyed himself too," Charmaine added.
She was fairly sure none of the kobolds heard her. They were all too busy dancing, cheering, and throwing their small blue hats into the air. When the noise had died down a little, and four sturdy kobolds had carried Rollo away, still soundlessly kicking and screaming, Timmins said seriously to Peter,
"That lubbock kept all of us in fear, it being the parent of the crown prince and all. What can we give the fire demon to show our gratitude, do you think?"
"Put Wizard Norland's kitchen taps back," Peter said promptly.
"That," said Timmins, "goes without saying. It was Rollo's doing. They were taken away. I meant, what can mere kobolds do for a fire demon that it can't do for itself?"
"I know," Charmaine said. Everyone was respectfully quiet as she went on. "Calcifer and his, family were trying to find out where all the king's money keeps disappearing to. Can you help them do that?"
There were murmurs from all round Charmaine's knees of,
"Easy, that is, and that's no problem,"
and quite a ripple of laughter, as if Charmaine had asked a stupid question. Timmins was so relieved that his brow unwrinkled entirely, making his nose and his whole face twice as long.
"That is easy to do," he said, "and costs nothing."
He glanced across to the other side of the cave, where at least 60 cuckoo clocks hung, all wagging their pendulums in 60 different rhythms.
"If you come with me now, I think we should be just in time to see the money going. Are you sure the fire demon would be pleased by this?"
"Absolutely," Charmaine said.
"Then follow me, please,"
Timmins said. He led the way toward the back of the cave. Wherever they were going to turned out to be quite a long walk. Charmaine became as confused as she had been on the way to the kobold's cave. They were in half dark the whole distance, and the route seemed to be all bends and sharp turns and hairpin corners. Every so often Timmins would say,
"Three short steps and turn right,"
or
"Count 8 human-sized steps and turn left, then sharp right, then left again."
And this went on for so long that Waif became tired out and whined to be picked up. Charmaine carried her for what seemed more than half the way.
"I must explain that the kobolds here belong to a different clan," Timmins said, when at last there seemed to be a little daylight ahead. "I like to think that my clan would have managed better than they do.
Then before Charmaine could ask what he meant, he went into a flurry of sharp rights and slow lefts, with a couple of zigzags thrown in, and she found they were at the end of an underground passage in cool green daylight. Marble steps, all greened over with mildew, led up into some bushes. The bushes must once have been planted on either side of the steps, but they had grown to fill the space entirely. Waif began to growl, sounding like a dog twice her size.
"Hush!" Timmins whispered. "No noise at all from here onward."
Waif stopped growling at once, but Charmaine could feel her small, hot body throbbing with hidden growls. Charmaine turned to Peter to make sure he had the sense to keep quiet too. Peter was not there. There was only herself, Waif, and Timmins. Charmaine, wholly exasperated, knew just what had happened. Somewhere along the confusing way when Timmins had said, "Turn left," Peter had turned right, or the other way round. Charmaine had no idea at what point this had happened, but she knew it had.
"Never mind," she thought. "He has enough coloured string round his fingers to find his way to Ingerie and back. He'll probably arrive at Great Uncle William's house long before I do." So she forgot about Peter, and concentrated on tiptoeing up the slippery mildewed steps, and then on peering out from among the bushes without rustling so much as one leaf. There was blazing sunlight beyond, blazing on very green, very beautifully kept grass, with a blindingly white garden path beyond that. The path led up between trees that had been carved into knobs and points and cones and discs, like a lesson in geometry, to a small storybook palace, one that had many small pointed towers with little blue roofs. Charmaine recognised it as Castel Choir, where Crown Prince Ludovic lived. She was slightly ashamed to realise that it was the building she always thought of when any book she was reading mentioned a palace. "I must be very unimaginative," she thought. Then, "No." Whenever her father made shortbreads to sell in boxes for May Day, a picture of Castel Choir always appeared on the top of the box. Castel Choir was, after all, the pride of High Norland. "No wonder it was so far to walk," she thought. "We must be halfway down the Norland Valley here, and it still is my idea of a perfect palace, so there." Footsteps crunched on the hot white path, and Prince Ludovic himself appeared, magnificent in white and azure silk, sauntering toward the palace. Just before he was level with the bush where Charmaine was, he stopped and turned.
"Come along, can't you?" he said angrily. "Get a move on."
"We're trying, Highness," piped a small, panting voice.
A line of kobolds trudged into view, each bowed down under a knobby leather sack. They were all more greyish-green than blue, and looked most unhappy. Some of the unhappiness may have been due to the sunlight, for kobolds preferred to live in the dark. But Charmaine thought their colour looked more like bad health. Their legs wobbled. One or two were coughing badly. The last one in the row was so unwell that he stumbled and fell down, dropping his sack, which spilled a scatter of gold coins across the blazing white path. At this, the colourless gentleman strode into view. He advanced on the fallen kobold and started kicking him. He did not kick particularly hard, nor did he look particularly cruel. It was more as if he was trying to get a machine going again. The kobold scrambled about under the kicks, desperately picking up gold coins, until he had them all back in the sack and managed to stagger to his feet again. The colourless gentleman left off kicking him and came to stroll beside Prince Ludovic.
"It's not as if it was even a heavy load," he said to the prince. "It's probably the last. They've no more money left, unless the king sells his books."
Prince Ludovic laughed.
"He'd rather die than do that, which suits me, of course. We'll have to think of some other way to get money, then. Castel Choir is so dashed expensive to run."
He looked back at the trudging, wobbling kobolds.
"Move along there, will you? I have to get back to the royal mansion for tea."
The colourless gentleman nodded and strode back to the kobolds, ready to start kicking again, and the prince waited for him, saying,
"Mind you, if I never see another crumpet in my life, it will be too soon for me."
The kobolds saw the colourless gentleman coming and did their best to hurry. All the same, it seemed an age to Charmaine until the procession was out of sight and she could no longer hear their footsteps crunching. She kept her arms tight round the throbbing waif, who seemed to want to jump down and chase the procession, and looked down through the leaves at Timmins.
"Why haven't you told anyone about this before? Why didn't you at least tell Wizard Norland?"
"Nobody asked," Timmins said, looking injured.
No, of course nobody asked, Charmaine thought. This was why Rollo was paid to make the kobolds angry with Great Uncle William. He'd have got round to asking them in the end if he hadn't been ill. She thought it was just as well that the lubbock was dead. If it was Prince Ludovic's parent, as Timmins had said, then it had probably meant to kill the crown prince and rule the country instead of him. It had more or less told her so, after all. But that still leaves Prince Ludovic to deal with, she thought. I really have to tell the king about him. It seems a bit hard on those kobolds, she said to Timmins.
It is, Timmins agreed. But they have not asked for help yet.
And, of course, it never occurred to you to help them without being asked, did it? Charmaine thought. Honestly, I give up.
Can you show me the way home? She asked.
Timmins hesitated.
Do you think the fire demon will be glad to know the money goes to Castel Choir? He asked.
Yes, Charmaine said. Or his family will.